Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Professor James Robinson, you may have heard, the economist and political scientist from the University of Chicago, has shared the Nobel Prize for Economics with two others, and he joins us now on WGN. Professor Robinson, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Have you come down to earth? Has your phone stopped pinging?
No. No, it hasn't. No.
I heard you say that somebody counseled you that if you want to win the Nobel Prize, you'll go mad. Don't even think about it. So even though it seemed like you had been on a track to legitimately qualify, maybe win the Nobel Prize, is it true you really hadn't wondered or thought much about this?
No, I always thought it was the best way to make yourself completely miserable to think about things like that. So I hadn't really thought about it, honestly. Yeah.
You've published three books that you co-authored with another professor. Your second book that you co-authored, Why Nations Fail, The Origins of Power, Prosperity, and Poverty, has been translated into 41 languages. You're actually the co-author of three books and numerous papers. Is it for one single thing, or is it the totality of your work that you're awarded the prize?
It's a little bit of both. I think the prize has sort of gone for the work that we did on kind of comparative economic development, which Professor Acemoglu and I tried to sort of sum up in Why Nations Fail. You know, that book, you know, we tried to write something very accessible, but it was built on top of a series of academic papers that we wrote with Simon Johnson.
I see. So
I think. You know, it's gone for sort of mostly the citation mentions those scientific papers that we wrote. But, you know, for us, that was always a big agenda. You know, it wasn't just the specific papers. It was just a much bigger agenda. So they've also, you know, been generous in talking about that as well.
But if I were to ask you what your thesis is in general about all of this, what would you say? What's the takeaway for the layman here as to the reason that you won the Nobel Prize?
Well, I think what our work, you know, establishes is that, you know, it's really the way that human beings themselves organize their society that makes it prosperous or poor. You know, there's no intrinsic reason that a country like Nigeria, you know, or Guatemala is much poorer than the United States or Canada. It's just the way that those societies got organized historically, you know, what we call the institutions, the kind of rules that channel people's incentives and opportunities in different directions, you know. So I think that's both very optimistic and very pessimistic, you know, in the sense that that means, you know, there's no reason why there's any poor people in the world, really, other than that, you know. And if you can make society in one way, you can remake it in a different way. But, you know, that's the optimistic bit. The pessimistic bit is, you know, of course, these things are also deeply rooted in history, you know, in the past. And some of those institutions are pretty difficult to change.
Understood. But if I were to optimize then the economy of a country, what's the political system we should have? Is it capitalism? Is it democracy? What's the best then society for the economic well-being of the people?
Well, what we talk about is inclusion. You know, I think that, you know, economic inclusion is, you know, critical. And what I mean by that is an economy which is designed to create very broad-based incentives and opportunities for people. But the economy, you know, in our view, is a sort of political construction. You know, when I talk about humans themselves kind of building society, that is a collective political process. So the emphasis a lot in Why Nations Fail is on political inclusion, how you need to get everyone's voice at the table, how you need to incorporate people in the mm-hmm. political system in order to get an inclusive economy. You know, for example, you know, in many ways, the economy in China has become much more inclusive in the past 50 years, and that's why there's been so much economic success. But that has an extremely extractive political system, you know, and ultimately you can't have an inclusive economy at the whim of a totalitarian dictatorship. So that's why political inclusion is so important. But how you design all of those things, I think there's a lot of variation in that. You know, compare the United States or Sweden, for example. You know, there's a lot of differences in the details of how those economies function, you know, in how inclusion works. And I think there's a lot of scope, you know, for choosing the types of institutions that work better with your history and work better with your culture and your society. You know, I work a lot in sub-Saharan Africa, and I would say, you know, there the political culture is different. The way political decisions get made is different. There's lots of problems with inclusion, of course, but what an inclusive society looks like in Botswana, say, I think is pretty different from what an inclusive society looks like in Sweden or the United States. And those differences are important.
I'll appreciate that as best I can, but inclusion sounds like political boilerplate these days. All the candidates in the United States say, you know, we want to welcome everybody. How well do you think the United States is mirroring your theories?
Well, I think, you know, the big picture over the past 200 years is, you know, in the United States, you know, people managed to create one of the world's most inclusive societies in history. Of course, there are lots of problems with that. You know, there was slavery until 1865. You know, there was discrimination against women, against indigenous people. So you know, there's no such thing as a perfect society. There's always room for improvement. But I think the bigger picture is, you know, the United States flourished because of immense inclusion in the economic sphere. And that came from inclusion in the political sphere. You know, it came from the way, you know, the Constitution was organized, the way states were empowered, you know, the way democracy worked. I think, you know, when you look at democracy in detail, you know, there's always problems. You know, there's always, you know, challenges. There's always, you know, I think, like, what we know, you know, what the evidence suggests is that, you know, what is it that Winston Churchill said? You know, it's the worst system except for all the others.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think, you know, clearly we're challenged in the United States at the moment because there's an immense kind of polarization about what should happen. You know, and there's a lot of disagreement on many types of issues. But I think if you look back at the history of democracy in the United States, you see that many times. You know, think about the period before the Civil War, for heaven's sake. You know, I mean, there was immense polarization, you know. And so I think, you know, what we've seen in the past and what we discuss in Why Nations Fail is that, you know, the United States has been able to kind of adjust to that, you know, and people have found common ground and they've made compromises and they've kind of come together. And then
Are you optimistic about where the United States is right now, Professor?
I think there's immense challenges. I don't know if I'm optimistic or not. You know, I think President Trump has no respect for most of the institutions in this country. And that certainly concerns me immensely.
Professor James Robinson is an economist and political scientist at the University of Chicago, whose picture with his adorable wife and son are in the paper. I'm sure you saw what the Sun-Times printed today or have other copies of it, but what a handsome young man and happy wife you and your wife is and you are. It's a lovely picture in the paper today, sir.
Thank you very much. Yes, we're all super, super happy. Yes.
I presume you also know what the translation is from dollars to kroners or kroners to dollars.
I haven't paid much attention to it. I think I know the ballpark. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's well deserved. It's nice to talk to you today, Professor. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
James Robinson from the University of Chicago. He has to share it with the other laureates, and don't mean to embarrass him with this while he's on with me, but it comes to about $350,000.